Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the first news story of today, and all eyes are on the capital city of Tshwane, where it looks like we may possibly be having some sort of change in the power arrangements in the capital city. So this comes as the Action SA and the ANC appear to have agreed on some kind of agreement in Johannesburg, where Action SA would be handed the speakership of the city of Joburg in exchange for supporting the ANC government there. It remains to be seen whether some of the other parties, such as the EFF, may leave the government in Johannesburg. But at the very least, the ANC can play a little bit harder ball, some of its smaller partners there with Action SA support. So now the question is, will this agreement expand to include the city of Tshwane? Currently, the DA plus Action SA plus a number of smaller parties like the Freedom Front Plus control the city of Tshwane with a DA mayor. However, there are now talks underway behind the scenes to maybe change up that agreement, as it looks like the alliance between Action SA and the DA may be in danger of falling apart. So, Panyaza Lesufi, the head of the ANC in Gauteng, has said that his party is in negotiation with the DA in Tshwane. He said, "The ANC doesn't necessarily want to disrupt government. We were confronted by correspondence from the DA. They want to discuss the issue of Tshwane with us, and we are more than willing to do so. So we have started those negotiations, but there is no rush. We want to bring all our partners to the table so they can review what is on the table by the DA." At the same time, Action SA leader Herman Mashaba has described his party's alignment with the DA as being an abusive relationship. He said that the party would be totally within its rights to seek out a better deal, possibly with the ANC. Now, I think there's a lot of questions to be asked about what exactly is going to be agreed upon, and I suspect, that we're still quite a long way off from seeing what exactly each side might be putting on the table here. But Herman, what do you make of this? Do you think that Tshwane may fall to an ANC Action SA coalition, or do you think the DA and the ANC might be able to form something together?
Well, I think the fact of the matter is I can't see a way for Sylvia Brink's mayoralty to survive full term. Now, that is sad to me. I think he's been doing a good job. I've known Sylvia for a couple of years, and I think his mayoralty has been really a step up for the city, for in which I live. So that would be sad. But the problem is, when the GNU was announced, I sent a message to a high-ranking person in the DA in Gauteng asking, what does this mean for local government, especially Tshwane, seeing as the principle of the GNU is that the largest party gets to appoint the executive leader, the president or the premier, or if it were applied to local government level, the executive mayor. And the answer I got was, we don't know. The leadership of the DA sort of rushed a lot of the rest of the party's lower structures into the GNU, and there seemed to have been a bit of a lack of communication about what would become of places like Tshwane, where the DA wasn't the largest party. The ANC is larger in the city council, but there is currently a government in place. So that was the first question is that, you know, that I had was, what does this mean for local government? And it seems that answer is still out there somewhere in the ether, making it very difficult for the DA to navigate its way forward. However, I think this is a dangerous game by Action SA. And I say that for the three reasons. Number one, it's not good politics for Mashaba to make the sinking of the Tshwane government about his party. He didn't say the voters have been abused by this government. He just said we've been in an abusive relationship. So what Action SA in a sense is saying is we don't like this arrangement. Yes. It might be working for the people of the city. It might be beneficial to the stability of the city. The city's finances might be stabilizing, but we don't like it. We don't like the vibes of this relationship. It's abusive. And that sort of strikes me as a particularly petty note for Mashaba to take. However, two other bigger problems I think should worry Action SA. Number one is there's the idea of working with the ANC when the ANC is represented by Ramaphosa. And then there's the idea of working with the ANC when the ANC is represented by Panyaza Lesufi. These are essentially two different ANCs, and Ramaphosa, despite what we may think of him, remains a popular politician, even amongst DA voters. People have a relatively positive view of Ramaphosa. So the national GNU effort of working with the ANC to form a government, you know, that's with Ramaphosa in a sense. Lesufi doesn't have that same sort of popularity. And the second problem that Action SA might face is the ANC at a national level is sort of remote and sort of not immediately a threat or a benefit to the people of South Africa on a day-to-day basis, where local government is incredibly tangible. It is about waste removal, potholes, sidewalks, water, sewage. It's really about the very basics of governance. And on that score, the ANC really doesn't have a wonderful track record in either Johannesburg or Tshwane. So Action SA, thinking that they're going into a sort of a DA-like arrangement with the ANC, but just at a local level, I think might be fundamentally missing the wood for the trees. And Nick, you also pointed out the fact that Tshwane has a stable government. The GNU was sort of a tactical decision to keep out MKEFF, the more radical forces, to form a stable government. If everything remains as they are now, Tshwane should be fine. So Action SA, I think, is setting itself up for some pain.
Indeed. Also so close to the local government elections, you know, they run the prospect of going into government now with the ANC and not necessarily able to, you know, even if that government worked brilliantly, it would still not be able to make an enormous amount of difference in the next 2 years. And I think that would completely muddy their image. You know, they've kind of caught a space now as being outside the GNU, but still kind of opposed to the ANC. But that's now sort of more complicated with their support of the ANC in Joburg. So, yeah, it does make one a little bit sort of confused as to what exactly Action SA's plan here is if they are keen on deposing the DA in Tshwane. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is about the crisis in Stats SA and the census. So we, of course, had our census. It was supposed to be, I think, in 2020, but then it was delayed somewhat, partly due to COVID. And instead, it became the 2022 census. And it has been roundly criticized by a number of independent observers for significant levels of undercount, up to 30%, which is, by the standards of these things, apparently a very, very bad number. There are also some anomalies in the data. Initially, the Statistics SA and the census people defended the census, saying that, you know, it was fine. They had done adjustments to make up for the deficiencies where they were. However, they recently released a summary of certain parts of the census, and they said that these will not be published due to their inaccuracy, and they include income and earnings, labor and employment, mortality and fertility. The census cost 2.3 billion rand to undertake, and it appears to produce a report that can't tell us very basic things about the country's layout. Someone writing on online criticizing this said this is a travesty. The size and scope of the census usually permit all kinds of users to explore income, employment, and demographic indicators to a fine level of granularity. It provides one of the key pegs for parameterizing population projections and feed into a host of policy and program initiatives. None of this seemingly will be possible. The failure of Census 2022 to produce data on incomes has direct implications for the allocation of resources through the national budget and for government's ability to measure the efficacy of its programs. Herman, I think that's pretty much right. It does look like it was kind of money down the drain for the most part with our census.
Yeah, and there needs to be... I mean, I'm not one eager to call for investigations or commissions of inquiries or whatever. I think on the whole, they are, with this government at least until recently, mostly theatrical. But there needs to be a serious investigation as to what happened here. Because whatever the case may be, the money down the drain is one thing. The future consequences of this is immense in a country where unemployment and socioeconomic living standard crises are really what should be defining our solutions-based debate about where to go from here. We now don't have the data on income and earnings and labor and employment. That is just bizarre. It is the basic bread and butter of any socioeconomic decision-making capacity, is to have that data in place. So at StatsSA, heads must roll. And I think it's probably a good opportunity to say, how about we appoint the best people for the job? Because as we know, the ANC has for some time had something of an aversion to merit-based appointments, preferring cadres, crooks, cronies, and comrades. And whatever the case may be here, somewhere, someone who was politically accountable and politically appointed didn't do their job, to the tune of a few billion now, but likely a few billion down the line as well. It is a travesty. It is horrific. It is the sort of nonsense that you would expect from really some of the sort of crappier third world nations. Up to now, at least, StatsSA has been relatively reliable and a good source of information for South Africans, for businesses, for people like us to understand what's going wrong and how to fix it. This is really banana republic stuff.
Of course, it's only going to create bigger problems down the line. I mean, do we wait until our sort of next census period in sort of 2030? Do we try and fix it now? And, you know, how easy will these problems be able to be fixed when we do the next census, if we've got this sort of basically bad batch of data over here? It's all just a bit of a nightmare, but we'll have to see what happens here. I suspect it's not the last we've heard of this, and I agree with you, there should definitely be investigations into exactly what went wrong here. Okay, let's move a little bit overseas now. Just touching very briefly on the American election. The Americans are, of course, in November electing a president for a four-year term. And this has been one of the most exciting and eventful election seasons in a while in U.S. Political history. We, of course, had the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. And then there was the fact that Joe Biden dropped out. There was Joe Biden's terrible debate performance. And then the surprise elevation of his vice president, Kamala Harris, to the position of candidate for the Democratic Party in the United States. We've now had an election that looked like it was going to be sewed up pretty tightly by Trump after the Republican National Convention being much more up in the air, one that seems far more up for grabs, 50-50 kind of coin flip type stuff. Herman, what do you make of it? We've just had the Democratic National Convention, and you listened to some of the speeches there.
Yeah, I listened particularly to the speech from just yesterday by Tim Walz, the VP candidate for Harris's ticket. And what struck me is something that, Nick, we've been discussing for a few weeks now, is to a very significant extent, the Democrats are trying to outflank Trump on the values question from the center right, where historically, at least going back to Reagan, even back to the 60s of Goldwater and so on, the idea of running on freedom was very much a Republican thing. Freedom and family values and good neighborliness, and it was all sort of motherhood and apple pie stuff that was solidly to the center, to the right of center, with the Democrats being a bit more progressive and sort of allergic to ideas like, you know, healthy families being a core pillar and freedom being useful. But in Tim Walz's speech, he just flipped that script on its head. And he went about how the Democrats are the party of freedom, trying to prevent the government from intervening and sort of muddling into people's personal lives, the freedom to, you know, stand up against corporations, where consumer rights is now a Democratic talking point. And all in all, you get this feeling that this is something between a Clinton 1996 and an Obama 2012 campaign. And based on current trajectories, I'd say Trump is in trouble. The move by the Democrats to tame their most extreme rhetoric on the left is, I think, risking the center swinging enough to Harris that states like Arizona and Nevada, both Carolinas, Virginia, they were all leaning Trump when Biden was still his opponent, are now, to my mind, either blue or purple with a hint of more blue than red.
It's kind of been a bit of a frustrating election to watch from a sort of policy perspective, because both parties have, for the most part, been so vague and spoken in such generalities about what's going on that it's actually created a sort of cliche of the of analysis now, where people describe this as a vibes-based election. And I think what you're talking about, there is very much a vibes strategy of kind of trying to make people feel like this is the direction we're approaching government from. And, you know, both campaigns have been very thin exactly on what specific policy program they have for the United States if they are to win. Trump is saying, I think his most definite policy thing is that there will be a massive deportation of every single illegal immigrant to the country. And Kamala Harris is something along the lines of enshrining the right to an abortion in federal law. But further than that, it really doesn't seem like either of them has put forward much of a plan on what to actually do to fix the country's problems.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And I must say, I'm sort of, for the first time in many, many years, I am more optimistic about where our politics might be heading than where the Americans might find themselves. Still a great country, still an exceptional place with, you know, a lot of benefits. But my word, it isn't an election I would want to vote in.
No, it's a big mess. But anyway, I'm sure it's only going to get messier and more fun as we get closer to November the 5th there, and we'll keep you updated on that. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope that you found the show interesting, and that's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.